This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
After finishing fourth in the Central Division, the Kootenai Ice hope to return to the postseason picture for the first time since 2014-15. Sophomore forward Peyton Krebs comes into the 2018-19 WHL season as one of the most highly touted prospects for the 2019 NHL Draft. The Ice will need a more consistent performance from their top tender if they're to finally put an end to a four-year playoff drought.
The season preview from the Kootenai Ice, courtesy of the Western Hockey League. Rumors abound, of course, that the Kootenai Ice are Winnipeg-bound for next season to play.
To be precise, the RM of McDonald-bound.
They'll actually play out of the U of M to start for the first couple years,
sure.
Allegedly, until their new facility is built, which would be, as you say, in the RM of McDonald, a 4,000 or 5,000 seat facility, supposedly going to be built out there to house the Kootenai Ice and then be another potential concert venue or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting to see if the city of Winnipeg can handle a third, what I'm going to call, professional hockey team, mm-hmm. just for lack of better description. I mean, they are considered, once you play junior hockey, you lose your U.S. college eligibility, so they are somewhat professional, despite being 15, 16, 17 years old, often, these players. But between the Jets, the Moose, and a potential Western Hockey League team, there'll be very much a saturation of the market. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Little past 10:30 in the morning on Saturday here on TSN Radio 1290. A quick note about the Philadelphia Flyers. They're, of course, in Winnipeg to play the Jets tomorrow afternoon. They'll be playing the Sabres coming up in about 90 minutes' time. They'll be doing so without Sean Couturier in their lineup, as he is day-to-day with a lower body injury. He won't play in Buffalo. No word on what that means, if he'll play in Winnipeg or not tomorrow afternoon. But you have to figure that if you're not going to play in Buffalo, which is, of course, your Eastern Conference rival, I'd say it's a little bit unlikely that he would play against the Jets unless he really did make a significant recovery. In any event, keep an eye on that. No Couturier for the Flyers today against the Sabres. No word on what that means for tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets. This segment of the program is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team. So, David, what do you think? You're the Moose guy. The Moose attendance has been dwindling this season, at least early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets are going strong, but you know there are anecdotally more tickets available on the secondary market than there have been before for the Winnipeg Jets. The Moose, their attendance numbers are down. Is there a market, is there an appetite for a third hockey team in the city of Winnipeg? And I'm excluding, with all due respect, the MJHL's Winnipeg Blues and any of the MMJHL teams that still populate the city of Winnipeg.
You know what? Our good friend Mike McIntyre wrote about this for the Winnipeg Free Press, and the title of it was, "Is Winnipeg Hockey Market Too Saturated for Relocating WHL Team to Be Successful?" Now, they're putting them in the south, I guess you'd call it southwestern part of the city. It's essentially where the city has planned that major expansion, obviously, with Bridgewater and all that sort of, you know, I believe the numbers come in around the city a size of Brandon, essentially being in, you know, obviously future casting, mm-hmm. for what it'll eventually look like. But you're putting in a big population and you're dropping this arena now down into that population center. And you're giving people the option to not have to drive, you know, 20, 25 minutes to the downtown rink to watch hockey. So, you know, I think, first of all, there's a tremendous amount of interest in WHL hockey in the province anyways. And I think that there's going to be that appeal to it. I think price point, I mean, what are you looking at for tickets? $15?
Yeah, they said 15 for the lower end tickets, maybe 20, 25 for higher end tickets.
So you're looking at a very, you know, cost effective means of taking a family for, you know, now conversely, as someone who watches the Moose a lot, I think to myself, would you rather, if the Moose were the farm team of another NHL city, then I could see people saying, well, I'd rather choose WHL watching up-and-coming young prospects or guys who will be prospects eventually in the NHL or AHL. But here you're thinking to yourself, well, you've got an opportunity to watch all these players who will eventually be with the Jets. Not all of them, obviously, but you're going to see guys like Mason Appleton, Sammy Nicou. You're watching those guys develop at a level when, first of all, it's a lot more affordable than going to Jets games. So for families, I mean, I know people who will take their entire family for the cost of one Jets ticket.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality. That's just what it is. Yeah. And that's what Moose bring. They bring you the opportunity to see affordable hockey, which is obviously what Kootenai Ice are offering potentially with WHL hockey. But again, the element that I think that gives the Moose the advantage is that you're saying to them, these are the future prospects. These are the future potential stars. We're seeing Mason Appleton. See, like the interesting thing, especially the benefit of having them in the same city, I think, is that you have that opportunity to not be caught off guard by players, and you can actually have some insight into them. You don't have to read about these players, you know. And again, the difference is now you can watch these games on AHL TV. It's not as a remote, but you know, it's, there was a big difference when the Jets Farm Club played in St. John's. I would, of course, read the reports, but yeah, I didn't have that firsthand knowledge.
Well, from the True North perspective, it makes perfect sense to have your farm team in the same city as your home team, even if the attendance numbers are dwindling. I mean, truthfully, I mean, obviously, True North would rather there be 5,000 or 6,000 fans in the arena. But if it's down to 4,000, I don't think they really are going to start to panic about that, just because the additional savings more than make up for a small dip in attendance.
Well, if
you're the paying public and you have $20 in your hand, and that's the cost of one ticket to see the Manitoba Moose, or that's the cost of one ticket to see the Western Hockey League in the same city, and you know, sure, maybe factor in the drive time or whatever. And, you know, maybe if you live in that southwest corner of the city, it's way more convenient to go there, and you don't have to necessarily pay for parking or whatever else associated with the Moose. To me, that $20 I have is going to go towards the AHL and the future stars of the Winnipeg Jets, or some future stars of the Winnipeg Jets, than the Western Hockey League. And I say that as a fan of the Western Hockey League, and I say that as somebody who supports junior hockey in Canada, albeit I want to say that I do think that the scam that they pull on not paying the players needs to cease and desist.
That'd be a whole nother that'd be a show, not a segment.
Right, so I'm not going to get too deep in that. I think that still is a, much like it is with college sports, I think that's a ridiculous, a ridiculous thing that still occurs in this day and age. But to me, that $20 I have is going to go to the Moose more than it is going to go to the Kootenai Ice. I mean, I take my kids. I'm not taking my kids to the Jets games because they're too young to appreciate it. But when I take my kids, I'm going to take them to the, I take my daughter and my son to the Moose games because it's affordable and they enjoy it and they can watch the players, you know, that they can watch with the Jets. And I don't know that I would ever necessarily factor into thinking I'm going to take them to go see Western Hockey League hockey when the AHL is right there.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea and an interesting debate, and it's going to be real interesting to see how it plays out. But for me, I think the one word you said, Drew, and just sticks out to me is parking. And especially in our winters, and especially if other things are happening downtown, I mean, people are deterred from driving downtown and trying to find parking and paying, what is it, $10, $15, $20 to park downtown. If the accessibility,
is that what it is for the Moose? I mean,
no,
I'll be
no,
honest.
No.
The parking lots don't jump.
No. Well, they're obviously there. Like, for example, I believe if you're going to park in, let's say, Portage Place,
yeah,
I think it's 15 now for Jets games, and it's 8 for Moose games.
Okay, so it's half the cost for the Moose game for parking.
Sure,
still a factor though.
Yeah, and regardless, if there's you know, if it's free parking at this facility now, this facility that they're going to be building. I mean, I really do think that is going to attract people. And WHL is great hockey. It's a lot of fun to watch. These guys are up and coming stars. You know, it's the Dub, so it's a little bit rough and tumble, which is always provides an entertainment factor, and perhaps maybe draw a little more attention for attracting the World Juniors to Winnipeg. Possibly? Who knows?
The World Juniors are going to be announced.
Well, I mean, it'll be a lot easier when you have two big arenas, right?
Obviously, well, that's what I'm saying.
This facility
will potentially be a draw for another World Junior Championship.
Well, if you think about it, because you're going to have, you know, like the American Games, Canadian Games will be played out of Bell MTS, and then you're going to have the less, you know, like the, let's say the Czechs.
Right. The games they played out of Selkirk back in 99, yeah, that's where they played a lot of those games.
Right. So you're going to have that opportunity to play them both within, technically, Winnipeg.
Yeah, or the surrounding communities.
Or the rural municipality,
yeah,
of McDonald's.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Now, I mean, they've still, you know, the ownership group has still denied that it's occurring. I mean, they say there is no press conference happening on Monday. We'll see. That's what's been reported, that there's going to be a press conference. You know, we'll see, obviously, what the reality is. But I think that they're, It's going to be sort of fascinating from the marketing side of things, mm-hmm. To see how they shape their product and how they sell their product when you have an audience that can, you know, you have a lot of competition for that $20 that I referenced there. I mean, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they're going to be able to get it over the Moose or vice versa.
You know, from their perspective, though, this is a Winnipeg-based ownership group.
Yeah.
This is a Winnipeg-based, you know, so from they tried to make it go in BC. And I think if they're thinking to themselves, well, they can bring this closer to home and make it successful, then that's something they're going to do.
Hey, all the power to them. If somebody wants to be an entrepreneur and somebody wants to take a risk, far be it from me to say that it's not a good idea, but it'll be very interesting, I think, to see how it plays out, something we'll obviously keep an eye on. When we come back, we're going to talk about which Canadian team has the best chance at a Stanley Cup this season. All the talk has been about the Jets and the Leafs. I think it's about time we start talking about the red-hot Calgary Flames. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
As a team, early on, we weren't playing like we are now, and that can affect the goaltending position. Obviously, there's some games that you let in a bad goal here or there, and it's all of a sudden, of course, everyone's in a panic mode. That's part of hockey. You watch every game every night, and there's not good goals scored, and pucks are ending up in the net, and that's just the way it goes. It's about sticking with it and not getting too down on yourself.
Calgary Flames goaltender Mike Smith playing much better hockey as of late. He's got his goals against average down under 3 at a 2.93. It had been a lot worse before that. Save percentage still needs some work, but the Calgary Flames are playing some absolutely fantastic hockey as of late. 8-1-1 in their last 10, winners of 4 in a row. They are up to 5th overall in the NHL. You know, a point behind both the Predators and the Avalanche, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the top team in the league right now. And the Flames and the Predators will do battle tonight in Calgary, a marquee matchup of two of the top teams in the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Trix is in town. Two X's on Trix. Played to two sold-out shows last night. He's been killing it all week long. If you're looking for something to do on this Saturday night, not very many tickets available. Get them quickly at rumorscomedyclub.com. David, what about the Calgary Flames? Are they in the conversation? Should they be talked about more as one of the candidates to end the curse of Canadian Stanley Cup winners? We all know it hasn't been since 1993, since the Canadian team lifted the Stanley Cup. 25 years now. It'll be into the 26th season since the Canadians last did it. Should the Calgary Flames be considered a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, you know, I mean, it seems that Mike Smith has got things turned around, and that's obviously important because we've talked about the importance of goaltending already on the show today and how you can't obviously do anything in this NHL without a good goaltender and without solid goaltending for a consecutive period of time. And that's the key, right, is, you know, it's always easy to go on a winning streak in November or in December, but the truth is, and, you know, everybody knows this who pays attention, is the fact that in the NHL it's a grind, and it's a long 82-season grind before you even make it to the playoffs. So I tend not to get overly excited about what teams are doing in November, December. This is important, obviously. I mean, this is building a foundation for your team moving forward and building something for the long term. So consistent play, I think, is very important. And you know, look, we saw the Calgary Flames lay a beatdown on the Jets in Calgary a few weeks back, obviously, before the Jets gone on a little bit of a run. And so I think this Calgary Flames team, I mean, you watch them, their offense is very good. I mean, they can score. I think they're second most right now, goals for in the Western Conference.
Yeah, they're tied fourth overall in terms of goals for in the NHL with 102.
Colorado here in the West.
Yeah, only Colorado's the only Western team that scored more than them. They've scored 107 goals, but the Flames up to 102 and a plus 20 goals to get differential.
Yeah, and that to me is key, is the fact that, you know, you're able to, you know, look, they're keeping the puck out of the net fairly well of late, and it, you know, it tends to make sense considering they're 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. But, you know, again, like I said, you look at the weapons that this Flames team has, and I could list them off, but, you know, most fans who pay attention to Calgary know who they've got on their roster.
Yeah.
This is a deep team. They've got a lot of really good players, and it seems like Bill Peters is getting the most out of this team, and they really seem to be going to bat for him. So I think, to my mind, again, you know, it's a long season. We'll see what happens as the season kind of runs down. But I absolutely think the Calgary Flames are a team that can be in the mix for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and we talked about the Flames' defense for so long and how much of a solid decor it is, and if they can get their goaltending right, which they seem to have been with big save Dave Riddick and Mike Smith now. But, I mean, you look at this offense, and you used the word prolific, Drew, I believe. Was that what
Certainly sounds like a word I would have used.
I was just going to say, that's a very Drew word. Yeah,
it's definitely a Drew word.
But you talk about their ability to pounce on teams when they smell blood. I mean, they scored in, the last month, they've had 3 5-goal periods where they've scored 5 goals in a period. Once against the Jets, once against the Golden Knights, and then against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So this is a team that when they feel good...
Three playoff teams last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when they feel good and things are rolling with them, they can score in bunches, to say the least. So yeah, this is definitely a very dangerous team entering, you know, second quarter of the season, we'll say.
That would be fair. And if you remember back to last year, the Flames were a really good team up until their player break. And then they had their player break, and they lost all their momentum. They came back off their player break, and they lost to the Jets in a shootout. Remember, it was a Saturday afternoon game in Calgary. Blake Wheeler scored the shootout winner. And then from that point on, the Flames season spiraled out of control, and they went into this downward spiral. So it'll be interesting to see if the Flames are able to maintain the positive start they've had. I mean, their offense, you have, you know, your top five scorers are all averaging a point a game, including defensemen Mark Giordano, who's been suspended for the next 2 games, so he's going to be out of the Flames lineup tonight against the Nashville Predators. But, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau has been absolutely amazing. He's up to 37 points in only 29 games played. Sean Monahan, Elias Lindholm looks like a fantastic acquisition in the offseason from the Carolina Hurricanes. Ironically, the Hurricanes, a team that can't score right now and are looking for some offensive help, according to the TSN insiders. Mm-hmm. But right now, everything is clicking well for the Calgary Flames, and that's even with James Neal having, you know, who was their big offseason signing, taking him away from the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, James Neal has 6 points in 29 games this year for the Flames. So obviously not all is well with the Flames, but their top six especially is just absolutely dynamic, and then it really falls off after that. That's where they're struggling to get anything. They're very top-heavy. They'll need to shore up what they're getting from the bottom six forwards.
And that, to me, is like a question of the depth, right? Again, you see it with any team, is that can you handle if those guys go cold? Do you have guys who are going to step up and do it? And, you know, I mean, we haven't talked about the Jets or the Leafs yet, and those are two other teams, obviously, that, you know, we've done a lot of talking about the Jets, so we probably don't need to mention them. Obviously, they're part of this conversation, but, you know, to me, obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a team you have to talk about out east as a potential Canadian representative, especially now that they have William Nylander signed. I mean, this is a year, to me at least, it appears that the Toronto Maple Leafs are in go-for-it mode, and why wouldn't you when you have Tavares and Matthews and Kadri?
Well, let me put you on the spot then. I mean, okay. We know the players involved. We know the Jets, you know, roster top to bottom and intricate details. Mm-hmm. We know the Flames roster. We know the Leafs roster. Mm-hmm. Given what you've seen from the three teams, which of these three Canadian teams would be your leader in the clubhouse right now as Stanley Cup favorites from Canada?
Ooh. Well, I mean, right now?
Right. I mean, maybe like, not. I mean, if you had to place a bet today and for the rest of the season, I mean, knowing what you know, looking at the rosters,
I would bet on all three teams.
You can't bet. You can't fence it here. You have to give one answer. Which of the three teams, the Jets, the Leafs, or the Flames, is the best team or the team most likely to raise the Stanley Cup from Canada?
Oh, God. I actually don't think it's the Flames. I'm leaning towards Toronto or Winnipeg, and I don't.
Okay,
know.
You're down to 50. You've improved your odds from 33% to 50%.
You know what? I don't know. It's a real tough one. I mean, the Jets were able to accomplish last year. I think if they can make it to the playoffs, knowing what they know, I don't like to use last year as too much as to, because it's a different team. Obviously, there's some, you know, there's a lot.
Yeah, it's not apples for apples.
Right. So, but I think the core group, what they learned in that playoff run last season up against the Vegas Golden Knights, making it as far as they did, I think that holds them in good stead. to at least challenge, you know, the Nashvilles or Colorado or whomever to make it back to the Western Conference Finals and at least to me make it to the Stanley Cup Final. But I also see the Leafs, now that they've added Tavares, having that ability too, which is why I see a Toronto-Winnipeg final and I see Winnipeg beating the Leafs in the finals seven games.
So you would say that's almost as close to a sitting on the fence as you could possibly could have. So
that's right.
You're going to say that of the three Canadian teams, the three upper echelon Canadian teams, you think the Jets are the most likely Stanley Cup winner?
I don't know. I mean, again, like I said.
Okay, forget it.
I'm more concerned about being lynched when I walk out of the TSN 1290 studios here in Pembina.
Literally, as you said, Toronto, a call game.
No, I mean, again, like I said, I think no, but I said the Jets would win. So the locals can calm down.
That's why they hung up.
Ah, perfect.
So, Shawnee, same question to you. We've talked right now. The Flames are playing great hockey. They're, you know, the Jets are playing pretty good hockey. The Leafs are the best of the Canadian teams right now in terms of straight points with 41 points in 29 games. The Flames are 38 points in 29 games, and the Jets are 36 points in 28 games. Same question.
Let's say hypothetically the Leafs and the Jets meet in the finals.
I don't care who meets in the finals.
I'm painting a picture here. The Jets would have had to gone through Nashville, which is potentially going to be the another huge grind of a series. We saw the toll that took on the Jets last year. I mean, just thinking of the level of competition that they're up against in a postseason, you look at the Leafs' differential of scoring just thus far. They're plus 28, so they're scoring at a crazy pace. Their power play, deadly. They draw a lot of penalties with that speed. I don't know. In a seven-game series, I kind of like Toronto.
Well, that's fair. I mean, you articulated a reasonable point of view there. So we will hopefully not have anybody burn you in effigy as a result of that. But I think it's a real interesting discussion as to which of these three Canadian teams is the favorite to be the Canadian representative or the Canadian, you know, the Canadian team that wins the Stanley Cup, if there is to be one this season.
I think more to the point, though, Drew, is the fact that if you recall just a few years ago, we were talking about how none of the Canadian teams were even making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And now you're in the position to look at Canadian teams. And again, you know, Edmonton is another team. We're obviously not talking about them right now in that context. But, you know, when you have Connor McDavid and what he's able to do, you don't want to discount him too much. And Montreal, who's surprisingly, you know, doing, you know, some first wild card spot. Again, I don't know that they're going to necessarily maintain that. But at the same time, we're not talking about them. So at least it's a positive for the Canadian markets that there's a lot of good things happening in Canada right now.
I'll tell you what. Let's pose the same question to Michael Tracos, the national hockey writer for Post Media, on the other side of the break. Michael joins us next. We'll look around the NHL with him. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three coming up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Michael Tracos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. He's a frequent guest on our program. Michael, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, guys. Thanks again for always having me on. We're talking about this morning. Like, we got a good slate of hockey ahead of us tonight.
Yes, we do, Michael. Last segment, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit to start off, so hopefully you'll forgive me. Last segment, we were talking about the Jets, the Leafs, and the Flames, and they are obviously the three upper echelon Canadian teams in the NHL this season. The Leafs second overall in points, the Flames fifth overall in points, and the Jets seventh overall in the points in the NHL. If you had to pick one of the three that is the most likely to end the Canadian drought in winning the Stanley Cup this season, who would you pick?
So if I say the Leafs, I'm a homer.
Yeah.
If I say the Flames, you're never going to have me on again.
No. We want 100% impartiality here. We're not homers, so we expect our guests to not be homers for the Jets either.
You know what? I will say it's going to come down to either Winnipeg or Toronto, and right now, I'm probably leaning towards Winnipeg just because they're further along in terms of that experience factor. You got to remember, like, what the Jets did last season in getting that close to the Stanley Cup final, that's something that Toronto hasn't been in the conference final since, I think, 2004. They haven't been in a Stanley Cup final since 1967. So this is a young group. We'll see what they're doing come playoff time. But right now, I love how the Leafs are playing. I love the fact that this is a team that's so fun to watch. And beyond that, they're getting great goaltending from Frederik Andersen. And now you add William Nylander to the lineup, and they just become that much more deadly. But, you know, they haven't been tested like the Jets have been in terms of that playoff action. So right now, I think that experience factor is going to benefit Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, Ehlers, all those guys, Hellebuck, come playoff time.
Now, Michael, there was a major announcement in the NHL, of course, with the 32nd team going to Seattle. What kind of unique challenges do you think that the arena specifically will present?
Well, for those who don't know, they're taking Key Arena and that iconic sloped roof. And it's so iconic that it was deemed a heritage building and you can't tear it down. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is the fact that they're going to try to gut the entire arena, dig 15 feet down, turn it into what was a basketball-first facility into something that is maybe hockey-first, or at least hockey-slash-basketball. The sidelines work for both, and that's a huge undertaking. It's going to cost somewhere north of $800 million, and I think had they been able to just tear the whole thing down, and including the roof, this is a team that's playing 2020. As it were, that roof presents a ton of problems, and we don't know what the challenges are going to be until they finally gut it and start building this thing up again. But it's enough of a challenge where the construction is going to get delayed almost a full year. So, well, we'll see what it looks like afterwards. In terms of the market, that's really the only challenge right now. I'm going to say, like, I was in Seattle, what was it, 2 weeks ago or a week ago, checking in with what it looks like as a hockey market. First thing you notice is just how big tech is over there. So they've got Amazon's headquarters, which is like 31 buildings and so many billion dollars in terms of jobs created. They've also got Microsoft, they got Google, they got Expedia, they've got Boeing still, they've got Costco. Like, there's a lot of money there. So selling corporate seats isn't going to be a problem. I think tapping into a market that is totally hungering for a winter sport is not going to be a problem. So I can't wait to see what it actually looks like, and can't wait to see a Canucks Seattle game there in the near future.
Michael, do you buy this notion lately that the Leafs aren't tough enough after no one essentially assaulted Nicholas Cronwall after he hit Austin Matthews?
That's a good point. And, you know, that's going to come up. Obviously, it's come up now, but I think it's going to come up as you get closer to the playoffs, because, you know, Washington won a Stanley Cup, not just because of the skill of Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Kuznetsov, but they won it because Ovechkin plays like a modern-day Eric Lindros, and they got Tom Wilson there, who is always playing with one foot over the line, and they've got a big, heavy team. And I wonder if come playoff time, that's still going to be a necessary ingredient, something that the Leafs are totally lacking. It kind of raised eyebrows here. I know it's a fourth-line forward that got traded in Josh Levo, but there are eyebrows raised in the sense that this is a guy that is, I think, 6'2", 200 pounds, and you traded him and you kept a guy like Tyler Ennis, who basically makes Mitch Marner look like a giant. That's what small Ennis is. So you come playoff time, I think you still need that element. I still think you need a bit of grit, a bit of sandpaper. You need a little pushback, and I'm with you. Austin Matthews goes down to the boards. That could have been a real, real nasty injury, whether it's back, shoulder, concussion, a head injury. The fact that no one stepped up, I think, tells you a lot about the fact that there's no one that can step up. No one's used to dropping their gloves here. Maybe the toughest guy on the team in terms of fighting prowess might be a guy like Nazem Kadri, and Kadri is not a fighter. So, yeah, we'll see if it's something that Babcock addresses. You obviously know history of the Red Wings. They never really had that in the modern day, after the days of Probert and I guess the Darren McCarty. More recently, they didn't have that kind of element to them, and they seem to be just fine. So we'll see if the Leafs kind of take a page out of that book, or if they look to get some grit as the season goes on.
Yeah, just kind of following up on that, do you know, the Leafs management and fans and maybe even teammates now, like, just hold their breath every time they watch Austin Matthews take a big hit, just based on, you know, his injury history as of, you know, thus far into his NHL career?
Yeah, it's getting to that point, guys. And, you know, the word is the reason why he changed his stride this season was because as a big man who skates and is that mobile, those back problems are not going away. So he addressed it in a proactive way by changing his skating style. But I think at the end of the day, this is a guy that's going to be sort of like Evgeny Malkin, where he's going to miss some time. I don't think we can expect that Austin Matthews is going to play 82 games every single year. I don't think he's got the body for it, and I think he's the kind of guy that doesn't shy away from contact, where he's not going to be a Phil Kessel, where he doesn't take a hit, he doesn't lay a hit, and he stays on the perimeter. No, that's not his guy. This guy's game. This is more of a Crosby, more like a Malkin-type player who loves those dirty areas, loves to score goals there, and because of that, he's going to take hits like he did on Thursday night.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, with the announcement that Seattle will be the NHL's 32nd team, the NHL wasted no time in moving the Arizona Coyotes into the Central Division and moving the new Seattle franchise to the Pacific Division. Did the NHL miss an opportunity to maybe change up their division format or change up the playoff format? Are you surprised that they just made this trade so quickly and seamlessly?
Yeah, I'll say two things there. I would have loved to have seen Edmonton, Calgary going into the Central and maybe Colorado go from the Central to the Pacific. I think that would have created a nice little rivalry for Winnipeg. I think it's unfortunate that the Jets are the only Canadian team in the Central, and beyond that, their travel is just outside of, I guess, Minnesota, is really horrendous. There's no direct flight. So I think if you had Edmonton and Calgary there, it would have alleviated a lot of that, and it would have been a little more interesting, especially with the way those three teams are all trending. Aside from that, yeah, I think I would have loved for them to change this whole wild card format, go back to a more traditional 1-8. I think we're seeing, you know, whether it's the Atlantic this year or like the Metro last year or like how bad the Pacific is this year, there's always going to be that imbalance between the two divisions. And it's really unfortunate. Like you're going to see a scenario where, at least in the Atlantic, you could get the top three teams all come from the Atlantic and two of them are all going to be bounced in by the second round. And it doesn't make any sense. So I would have loved for them to go into more traditional 1-8, 2-7, and go from there. Forget about the whole divisional rivalries. You know, rivalries are more, it's organic. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. The idea that you can sort of force two in and play matchmaker, I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of that.
You know, Michael, after going 8-11-1 in the first 20 games, the Golden Knights have gone 8-2 and put themselves into third in that Pacific Division. Do you think that the word of the demise of the Golden Knights was a little premature?
Yeah, the house always wins, boys. All right, you've been to Vegas, right? you can beat them a couple rounds, you know, a couple hands here or there. You can feel on top. You get your free steak dinner. You got your drinks there, but eventually you go home and your pockets are empty. Okay, so this is a lesson to anyone who's going to go take a trip to Vegas. All right, don't fool yourself. The Golden Knights are always going to come out on top, it seems like. And, you know, it was just a matter of time. Like, how many bodies were they missing in that first couple months? Like, Nate Schmidt wasn't there. Paul Stastny, is he playing now? Like, Max Pacioretty needs to find his legs. Shea Theodore was hurt. Alex Tuck was hurt. Eric Halla. Like, that's some significant injuries to your forwards, your D. And the only guy who was really kind of holding the fort, and he wasn't even playing up to snuff, was Marc-Andre Fleury. So, you know, I think the market has corrected itself. I think this is a playoff team, even more so for the fact that this is a team that plays in the Pacific. So basically, you got to be better than Anaheim and Edmonton to make the playoffs. And, you know, that's not a tall order these days, especially with also the San Jose Sharks struggling. So, yeah, I think the Golden Knights are going to be in the playoffs. I don't know if they go all the way to the Stanley Cup final again, but, you know, that's going to be a tough team to face. Like, even without adding Pacioretty and Stastny, that was still going to be a team that was going to probably trend upwards because of the age of their roster. So now that Max seems to be finding his rhythm and getting a little bit more comfortable, I expect great things for this team.
You know, Michael, one way I find to get a moral victory against the house in Vegas is the free drinks at the penny slots. But that's just me.
They're all watered down, though.
Not if you tip well.
Well, that's never going to happen for me, though.
Anyways, I just scrolling through your Twitter timeline. Michael, you know, personally, one of my favorite things to do is watch the NHL mic'd up segments that they have, you know, either on YouTube or whatever various outlets are putting them out. But you have a gif here of just one of the all-time trash talks, I thought, of Max Domi mouthing waivers to Zach Smith when when the Habs played the Sens. That's top-notch, if I don't say so myself.
Yeah, and it's not personal, really. It's not like he attacked his family or something off the ice. And I think, obviously, it was an embarrassing thing that happened to Zach Smith. And to be honest, I think it was more embarrassing for the organization and the general manager than it was for actual Zach Smith. But good on Domi for just recognizing that, hey, if I want to get under the skin of this guy, all I got to say is the W word, and that's just going to set him off. So, you know, he did pay the price. Like, I hope Domi didn't cheap out on his nether regions of protection there, because he was getting quite a bit of stick work in that area.
Michael, last question for you. We always appreciate your time. Michael Tracos, national hockey writer for Post Media. Connor McDavid's time on ice is, I mean, from my perspective, bordering on ridiculous. And, you know, Ken Hitchcock doesn't seem like he's going to tamper it back. He seems like, if anything, he might add to it. I mean, McDavid's the greatest player in the game right now. I'm sure I'll listen to a debate, but anybody who wants to do that is going to be fighting an uphill battle in my mind. Can this time on ice continue without there being any ramifications to McDavid?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It seems like Hitchcock is just going to push this thoroughbred until he completely breaks. And maybe that was a sign the other night where McDavid missed the game because of quote-unquote illness. But, you know, this is what happens when you install a guy in Hitchcock who had been retired. You pull him out of retirement, you say, coach until the end of the season and coach it the way you want to do it and coach it the way you see fit. Well, he's going to coach it that way. So, you know, like Ken Hitchcock is basically coaching for tomorrow. He's coaching, not for tomorrow, he's coaching for today. He's coaching for whatever game, whatever shift he is overseeing at the time. And he's not thinking what this might be doing to McDavid a year from now or what this is doing for the rest of the Oilers. So, I don't know. I don't think you can win this way. At the same time, if you're Hitch, you're looking at that lineup, and outside of McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins, who else can you trust out there amongst the forward group? So, you know, this is really another thing that just kind of points towards Peter Chiarelli, and you're saying to yourself, okay, well, he doesn't get the coach the players to put on the ice. Well, this is what you get. You get McDavid for arguably, what, half the game now.
Michael Tracos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. He's a frequent guest on our program. Michael, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy the hockey tonight.
Likewise, Michael. We'll talk to you again real soon. When we come back, what are we doing when we come back? I should look at this. We're going to talk about Drew Doughty and his comments about his Los Angeles Kings and the team's lack of emotion and compete level. Things not going well in La La Land this year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We got a power play in the third. We didn't get anything out. They got a power play goal, so it seems like a little bit the same story. I think they certainly had the breaks going their way tonight, though. They got probably three that, you know, they usually don't go in. But saying that, we, you know, that was a game that, like the last game, that we felt we had a good chance to win.
Los Angeles Kings head coach, I guess interim Los Angeles Kings head coach, Willie Desjardins, after the Kings lost 6-3 to the New Jersey Devils earlier this week, that was a couple nights ago, the LA Kings right at the bottom of the NHL standings, 10-18-1. We know just how awful of a year it has been in LA. They've only scored 62 goals in 29 games, which is just barely over two goals a game. Drew Doughty did not mince his words, let's say, when it came to his performance of his team against the Devils. Here's his quote: "We're obviously super frustrated. Another game that we didn't perform well enough. I don't know if we even hit the 20-shot mark. It's frustrating. It's embarrassing. It's a lot of things. I just don't see enough emotion from the entire group to get us out of this. It's not going to take three or four different guys every night. It's got to take the entire group, and I know that no one's seeing the emotion out there. I'm sure you guys can see it from up top. We're playing with a lack of emotion, and that's the bottom line. It's critical comments. He's not wrong, certainly. But it's not going to change anytime soon unless the LA Kings, you know, get Jack Hughes in the lottery. And right now they're the favorite to have the most lottery ping pong balls. But this is a bad team in LA, and it's a bad team. In his comments here, Drew Doughty is calling out, you know, his teammates. He's calling out himself and his teammates, saying, you know, it's okay if we play poor. It's okay if we lose. But to lose and not have any emotion behind our game, that's where it's, you know, not acceptable.
Well, and people are talking about how he didn't make an effort to stop an empty net goal the other night. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, the LA Kings are a bad hockey team. There's really, 62 goals for.
Yeah.
That's, again, we were joking before the segment started that Patrick Laine almost has as many goals as the LA Kings. And so, you know, they picked up Brendan Leipzig off of waivers from the Canucks, hoping that he could spark something. I think he scored his first goal with them the other night. But, I mean, this is an LA Kings team that, you know, first of all, their goals against isn't terrible. It's not great. But again, when your goal differential is minus 28 and you're not, you know, you're sitting at the bottom of the conference. I mean, Drew Doughty's a veteran guy. He's won multiple Stanley Cups. His focus is trying to, you know, he's got a veteran group. And, you know, obviously they've lost Kovalchuk now to the injury to his lower body, to his foot or whatever, his ankle
or something. Yeah.
So he's got that ankle issue. And so they've lost him for a little bit. But the truth is they're a veteran group. And he's just trying to get them going. And I think he knows that while the season is likely lost at this point, technically they are only 12 points back. We know that's like, that's most, well, no, don't get me wrong. I know it's insurmountable, but at the same time, he's doing what he's got to do, I guess. And you know what? It's rare to hear a guy call out his entire team that publicly, but I think that's just frustration talking. And when you're used to perennially challenging and being seen as a big boy in the NHL, and now you're regarded as, you know,
a minnow,
and you're 2 points. I mean, that gets frustrating for a proud guy who grew used to winning. And I'm not saying he's not part of the, you know, partly responsible, but, you know, again, it's a team game. It's not just on one person.
Sean Moore from Drew Doughty: lost another game, gave up another 5 or 6 goals or whatever it is. I don't really have too much to say. Just, it's pathetic. It's embarrassing. It's frustrating. It's one thing to lose games when guys are competing. You can live with that. And you can live with doing good things. But when we're not doing well and we're not competing, you can't live with it. And we haven't lived with it since it started happening. It's going to take everyone to get us out of this, not just 3 or 4 guys, like I said. I mean, a frustrated player, but, you know, I don't see any panacea to the problems of the LA Kings.
No, I mean, we can't even hear the tone, and you can just kind of hear how disappointed and angry Drew Doughty is. This is a guy who's used to winning. This is a guy that hasn't lost very much throughout his entire, probably, hockey career. And it's taken its toll. It's almost it's reminiscent maybe of a Ryan O'Reilly when he was done with the Sabres, you know, saying that the toll that the losing is taking on him mentally and just with the team. And LA is just, they're not what they once were. The NHL It doesn't attract the same team that the LA Kings were trying to build back when they were in their heyday, with the big, bruising guys that can, you know, initiate pain and punishment. It's a speed game now. It's a fast man's game. It's a young man's game. The LA Kings are an older team, and bringing in Ilya Kovalchuk, with all due respect, who was relegated to the fourth line before he was injured. I mean, you look at their roster. I refuse to believe Ilya Kovalchuk is worse than half of the players you look at on these, or the forwards you look at on these roster, but there he was on the top, on the fourth line. So whether it's his effort or his skating abilities to keep up anymore, I don't know, but
if you're Doughty and you signed an 8-year, $88 million contract extension that hasn't even started yet, and you have a no-move clause,
he negotiated himself. He's solely responsible.
I'm not, does he consider asking to see if they would move him?
I mean, you look like you're going to be a bad team for the next few seasons.
Yeah, but then you think to yourself, you've got. I mean, again, it's all about desire.
You've got $11 million and you're living in L.A. It's not a bad life,
right? And you've already got
$11 million a year,
and you've got cups in your back pocket. Yeah, so you've already won. You've got your legacy set.
You're a gold medal Olympian.
Well, and I just looked. I saw they said that I think he just became the number one assist leader for all LA Kings defensemen. I mean, the guy is going to go down as Mr. LA. So, I mean, it's do you move to chase something? Now, I mean, again, he obviously wouldn't go to Toronto most likely, even though he's from that area. But
they could not afford that.
But, well, no, not only that, but like his comments to that effect the last couple of seasons.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think I don't see him asking. I think he just wants his team to get better. I think he's comfortable in LA. I don't see him as a candidate to request a trade. I could be wrong, but I don't have any particular insight there. But I would see him being loath to leave LA and the comfort that of knowing that that's your organization.
Last comment from Doughty. He certainly was able to fill our fodder of quotes based on that post game against the Devils. Doughty, when he's asked if he's satisfied with the level of compete on the team, no. You see some guys playing physical, and the bottom line is that the Kings have to be a physical hockey team. We're not as skilled as the other teams. That's just the bottom line. We have to be a physical team. We have to be hard to play against. We have to have teams come in here and be like, oh no, we've got to play the LA Kings again in their arena. I don't see enough physicality from our team. I don't see enough compete. And that's why we're losing these games to teams that are fighting for the last playoff spots with us in the standings too. I'm not talking about New Jersey necessarily. I'm talking about other teams. But how we're losing to these teams, it's not acceptable. I want to give credit to John Rosen, the LA Kings insider, LAKingsInsider.com, for providing those quotes and for providing the transcript of Doughty's comments. Really interesting comments from Drew Doughty. Mm-hmm. A frustrating season all around in Los Angeles. You know, that's a team that if the ping pong balls fall their way and they're able to get Jack Hughes, makes a world of difference. But if they're not, it looks like it's going to be a long, dark couple years in LA and for the Kings' success. When we come back, Josh Brewster is going to join us. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio show host. He joins us to talk about the Ducks, or as they're better known as, the Anaheim Gibsons, because he's the only team keeping that team afloat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Asor and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Josh Brewster. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio show host. Josh, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Josh. The Jets and the Ducks have not yet made acquaintance this season, but if you look at the Anaheim Ducks sitting there in second spot in the Pacific Division, we wanted to bring you on to talk about the Ducks. And, the superlatives regarding John Gibson and his performance this season cease to be sufficient, given how he has really been the difference right now, keeping the Anaheim Ducks in a playoff spot despite them having a minus 14 goal differential.
Yeah, well, look, the club is 30th in goals for, and I think it's odd that they're middle of the pack when it comes to 5-on-5, so it goes to show you that the special teams is not going real well either. Yeah, someone just asked me a few minutes ago, is it possible that Gibson could be a Vezina candidate on a club that is really not that much better than 500. And my answer is yes, and it's a little bit of a surprise, but, if you're talking about it, I get calls from the East Coast, people talking about it. You look in the latest hockey news is a big feature. And every other night there's another spectacular save. And, he's just responded very well to his big new contract and his position with the club. And, the nuts and bolts of John Gibson's game, the economy of motion, the positioning, not lunging as much because he has the ability to do that. His whole act has gotten a lot tighter in the last two seasons. And, you know, he's just done a spectacular job for the Ducks. And, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know how much he'll dominate statistically, but it's entirely possible that not only should he be in the Vezina equation, you have to wonder if he should be in the MVP equation, although I think that's rather far-fetched. But I think when everybody east to west is catching notice of what Gibson is doing, you know, that tells you something because, you know, as you know, the games are kind of late out here. You guys are in the Western Conference too, and sometimes it's a little harder for a guy to poke through, but I'm certainly hearing about John Gibson constantly, and I think that he and Ryan Miller are the best tandem in the league, quite honestly.
Well, Josh, that perfectly leads into my question because it was going to be about Ryan Miller. I mean, he's about to set the record for the all-time leader among U.S. goalies for wins. Just how significant has he been for Anaheim? And more importantly, just how much does that attaining that record mean for Ryan Miller?
Oh, listen, I mean, you know, this is a huge precipice he's on here, you know, to if and when he becomes the all-time winningest U.S. goaltender, forever how long that'll be. I mean, you still have Jonathan Quick in the thick of his career, so I'm sure he's going to creep up at some point. But, you know, Ryan Miller mentally is very strong. He's a very disciplined guy, and he still has the same preparation he's had for years, and he's very laser-focused. And if you want to look at, you know, the subtext, you know, behind what John Gibson is doing, I think that, you know, the mentality that Gibson has these days is directly relatable to two seasons with Ryan Miller. Miller is a very disciplined guy, and you're still getting the Ryan Miller, quite honestly, you're still getting the Ryan Miller you got 10 or 15 years ago. He just doesn't play that much. And so, you know, I think that Miller's been spectacular, and I think I've always liked a veteran in the backup role. My top goaltending prospect I put in the AHL and make him play all the time, but in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned, if you have a young goaltender as your starter, I think a veteran is the way to go, and Miller has been everything that they could have asked for in a backup.
Josh, just, you know, bluntly, what's going right for Pontus Aberg?
Josh, what's going right for Pontus Aberg?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes a guy just needs a shot, and Aberg had given glimpses in Nashville. I was a little surprised Nashville even let him go away, but he showed some glimpses, and he just, you know, he's got to change the scenery now, and you have a big injury to Corey Perry that's going to stretch through the whole season. And, you know, the Ducks have Andre Kasha and Jakob Silverberg, but, you know, Bob Murray needs some low-cost solutions, and he needs some entry-level solutions because you've got Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler eating up a lot of the cap dollars. So, you know, Aberg has been a guy who he's out there trying to win all the time. He's not taking any nights off, and the first test you have to pass, and even a guy like Kiefer Sherwood, who nobody's heard of, has passed the test, which is, if you're willing to win every one-on-one battle every single night or try to win it every single night, you're going to play for Randy Carlyle. And I think that Aberg came in, and, you know, he could easily be sitting on the bench, but he's always shown a huge compete level, and he shoots, and they need him, and he can get around quickly, and, you know, just another guy who needs a little change of scenery. And I'm sure the Ducks are kind of hoping for the same thing of this kid that they picked up, Daniel Sprong. But, you know, Aberg has seized the opportunity and has had a lot of jump on every shift. You know, you just don't see him floating. And he works extremely hard, and he's been rewarded. I mean, who would have predicted he's their top goal scorer?
Josh Brewster is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio show host, talking about the Ducks as they sit in second place in the Pacific Division. Josh, you know, obviously the offensive struggles have been well documented on the team. Ryan Getzlaff leads the team with 8 goals and 14 assists for 22 points in 25 games played. You know, How are the offensive struggles sort of weighing on his shoulders, if at all? I mean, we know that Getzlaff is one of the great leaders in the game. We know he's been, you know, he has been to some degree the Anaheim Ducks for much of the last decade. How is he sort of handling the offensive struggles of the team?
With confidence. There's one thing about Ryan Getzlaff is someone asked him, let me say this. Someone asked him, what would you have done with your life had you not been a hockey player? And his immediate answer was, I would have been an athlete. I would have played baseball. I would have played some other sport. This is the typical story of a guy who, and you knew him on the playground as a kid, he just dominated everything he ever did. And he was the best in your school, and he was the best at your local rink, and he was the best in your county, and then he made it to the states, and then he made it to the whatever, I mean, to the national team. You know, he was just, he's always been a winner. And he's an extremely confident guy. And nothing really phases him. And so, you know, his confidence, I think, and his leadership on the team, I think, has always been very strong. And so as far as how is he handling it, I think that he, you know, he remains just as confident as ever. I think there's a lot of things swirling around him, which is that, look, the Ducks paid heavily for Kessler, Perry, and for Getzlaff. And they had some great playoff runs with this incarnation of the club. They never got to the promised land with this club. Of course, Getzlaff won a couple years ago, but, you know, now they're in a situation where they need a lot of entry-level solutions and a lot of low-cost solutions. So it's a lot of things swirling around Getzlaff, but he always shows up. And, you know, he's just still really at his age. He hasn't dropped off. You know, age has not caught him yet. The way it's caught Kessler and the way it may have caught Perry, it just hasn't caught him yet, and he remains very, very confident. So that's one thing the Ducks can rely on other than John Gibson is that their captain is right on the money most every night.
You know, Josh, after the last two seasons scoring 33 and 34 goals, Ricard Raquel only has 5 goals, missed his first game of the season last night, I think, for the Ducks with a lower body injury. But what has been the difference in his season this year?
Well, you know, I think that it happens to every goal scorer. Everybody's going to take a little dip here and there. I think that with Raquel, you know, I honestly kind of throw Raquel in there with Henrique, in that I think that a lot of the inexperience that the Ducks have had in the lineup, and there have been nights earlier in the season where the Ducks were so banged up, they had eight new guys out of 12 forwards in the forward ranks. And I think there's just been a hell of a lot of inexperience out there. And I think that, you know, the Ducks' execution as a team, I would say 45% of these games, the execution level isn't there as a team. And as far as Raquel goes, you know, he's been pressing. I mean, you can see that he's putting it out there. You can see it's not landing. He had a big overtime goal recently and, you know, seemed to stir his confidence. He missed last night's game. He's got an ankle injury now. Might just be one of those years where it doesn't land for him. I don't think that he's been floating, but I just don't think it's landing for him. And he has there's a lot more road left on this season, and he can make things right. But I think that what's going to have to happen is that, you know, the Ducks are unfortunately, as a team, are not scoring a lot of goals, and, you know, there's not a lot of energy in the air when it comes to the offense, and there's no real opportunity to have like a, you know, 4, 5, 6 goal night. Those just aren't happening, and so the goals aren't piling up for him, because I don't think the team plays from behind a lot, and I think a lot of those things kind of impact what he's able to do.
You know, Josh, a quick follow up to that one. You mentioned it in your answer about opportunity for other players. Is there any opportunity from players from San Diego? And we had someone ask us about how Chase DeLeo, an old friend here in Winnipeg, is doing with that organization.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They've got a few of them, don't they? I mean, you know, Chase DeLeo is down there in San Diego. He's doing all right. Troy Terry is down there, and that's a player the Ducks really like. And, of course, Chase DeLeo is from here, so they want to press him into action at some point. But Troy Terry, Sam Steele, he's a very, very big prospect for them. He's in San Diego, too. You know, I think that as far as Chase DeLeo goes, you know, it's a reminder how tough it is to make it into this league, because, all I can say is when if he does get pressed into action here, he's going to have to upstage, you know, a couple guys like Kiefer Sherwood, who came out of nowhere. And Kiefer Sherwood is a kid from Columbus, Ohio. He's upstaged, you know, guys like Sam Steele, Chase DeLeo, Troy Terry, guys like this. And it's going to be tough for a guy like DeLeo to stick. And, you know, when you're looking at Troy Terry and Sam Steele down there, you know, the pecking order in Anaheim is pretty great. The Ducks have a lot of depth, and I think it's going to be tough for DeLeo to crack this lineup anytime soon.
Speaking of opportunities, Josh, first of all, how about that debut goal for the aforementioned Daniel Sprong, that short side shot that was pretty impressive, to say the least. And, you know, what are the plans for the young forward who really couldn't seem to get to stick and stay with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, this is what I'm talking about. This is the entry-level solution you need, okay? This is where you say, okay, I pick up Pontus Aberg off of waivers. He produces. Then I use one of my defensive assets, and Marcus Pedersen's a good young defensive prospect, so they give him the Pittsburgh. They get Daniel Sprong. Sprong comes in his first two games. He gets 4 shots on goal in each game. He has 8 shots on goal in 2 games. He's off to a great start. I was watching that Fogle kid from Carolina. You know, he started hot, then the last 20 games been nothing. So that happens with young guys. But as far as Daniel Sprong goes, look, it's just another kid like, you know, Perlini or Strom or Nick Schmaltz or something who's going to get a change of scenery. He's going to come into Anaheim. Max Domi gets a change of scenery. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened to him. So what's happening here is, like, you're looking at a situation where Corey Perry, when he comes back, he could be a first-line guy. He could end up being an $8 million third-line guy, fourth-line guy. And if that happens, then you have to get a guy like Daniel Sprong, has to catch a tread and really produce for you. So what they're hoping is that this is, I mean, this can cure a lot of ills. If you have higher-priced players who aren't as productive as they used to be, they're hoping that a kid like Sprong, who he put that puck the other night right next to Crawford's ear, and then Sidney Crosby came out the next night and did a shot exactly the same from a hard angle. It was like, it was almost like it was his tribute to his former teammate, you know? But it was an interesting goal. But I've seen this act a million times. Guys like Dan Sexton, et cetera, they come in, they're gangbusters, they want to shoot, then all of a sudden they disappear. So now, you know, Randy and Bob Murray have been doing this for quite a while. You call me in about 20 games, and then we'll really take Daniel Sprong's temperature, because if he can come in and produce the way Aberg has produced, then the Ducks start to get really dangerous.
Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio show host. Josh, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about the Ducks.
It's my pleasure, guys. Call anytime.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. When we come back, one final segment, we discuss Ryan Reeves' hit on Tom Wilson and his comments in the aftermath of that hit. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Sean Assard, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Quick update from the Winnipeg Jets world. Defenseman Cam Schilling has been reassigned to the Manitoba Moose. A pretty good sign that Josh Morrissey will be back in the lineup tomorrow against the Philadelphia Flyers, which is what we expected. Sammy Niku presumably would be the Jets' seventh defenseman, at least until Joe Morrow is back healthy, and then we'll see what happens with him. You wouldn't play Niku over Kulikov in the lineup, would you?
Well, I mean, I don't make those decisions, but I suspect Paul Maurice would. And you know, to Dmitry Kulikov's defense, his last game before his injury was a good one. Well, the first period went before he got injured, and then I actually thought he played okay yesterday, and he saved a goal. So I thought his game was okay.
At least on the short-term basis, my expectation is that it'll be Kulikov in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to sit a $4.3 million player.
Guys, we have the Legal Curve Hockey Hotline surprise from Arizona.
Do we don't really need him on the air.
Hold on. Go to the hotline.
Now, let's go live
on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
I hope this is fake ICSEG. I mean, you know, none of us need this. We were enjoying a very peaceful Saturday morning. You should spend quality time with your wife and child.
Wait, hold on. You're presupposing it is Ezzy. How do you know this isn't a guest that you're now insulting?
Well, fine. If this is anyone other than Ezzy, I apologize. But if this is Ezzy, go spend quality time with your family.
Dial tone.
Drew, Dave was basically begging me to come on the show. He's been texting me since the show started to come on. So don't pretend like you're not happy to hear me.
It's not a Saturday morning if we're not hearing Ezzy's voice. That's all I've got to say.
How's Arizona?
Boys, I've been listening to most of it.
I hope you're outside listening at least. I mean, if you're going to be in Arizona, you might as well you might as well at least get some nice weather and get some, what is that, vitamin E? Is that what comes out
D.
of it? D is a vitamin D? Okay.
Yes.
Well, the main reason why I called, boys, was just to let you know that I'm looking at the pool right now. I'm about to jump in. Might have a margarita or two. Maybe get a round of golf in. I'm not sure if I'll have time, but I just wanted to...
Sounds like you got a nice little Saturday plan.
Yeah. Know that I was thinking of you, boys.
Are you going to be able to get to Bed Bath & Beyond as well after you do all that fun stuff?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. We're going to do a little shopping later today, but... first time in Arizona, and I know, Drew, you've been here, and it's quite beautiful, but I have to say, it's very weird to not be on the show with you guys today.
But you are on the show with us right now.
I meant actually in studio, Drew, not on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, calling in as a guest, though, Ez, that's got to be a rare... I think this must be the first time.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to bill us. He's going to send us a bill for his appearance on the show. You know,
he can send it all he wants. I won't pay it.
Any comment about
that? What happened in that Jets game last night, by the way?
What's that?
What happened in that Jets game last night, by the way?
You didn't watch?
No, I was on plane.
It was a ho-hum game. I mean, you know what, Ez? Best suggestion. Tune into the first hour of the program.
Yeah, listen to the podcast. You know, we broke it down in detail, you know, which isn't the easiest thing to do when you're talking about a 1-0 game where not a lot happened. I think actually most of the people in the crowd were a little upset by your absence, so that sort of, you know, factored into a little bit of the environment at the rink last night. As people were concerned about you not being there. Where's Ezzy? Is Ezzy okay?
Yeah, right.
You know, why isn't Ezzy here? A lot of talk about that.
Yeah, I don't think so, Drew, but it sounds like the Jets played well. Jake Allen obviously had a good game. I'll have to catch the highlights, but I mean, they got to get back to business tomorrow and beat the Flyers, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's the point of all this?
What do you mean? We just wanted to hear Ezzy's voice.
Did we?
I'm never going to complain about hearing Ezzy's voice.
Okay. Well, in that case, Ezzy, what else is planned for the vacation?
We're going to see a Cardinals game tomorrow. The Cardinals are playing the Lions, and we're down here with family, so we're just going to, you know, take it easy.
Like I said,
I'm going to jump in the pool in a second and have a couple of margaritas and just enjoy our time down here.
May we suggest you not jump in the pool with the phone? That would be...
Or the margarita.
Well, yeah, you can jump in the pool with a margarita, as long as you can balance it.
Have you ever seen
Ezzy
jump in a pool?
Yeah,
it's not the most graceful.
Mind if I work on my cannonballs?
Yeah, it's a full body jump at that point in time, but that'll be fun. Cardinals Lions football game. I mean, not the best teams in the NFL, but
good
an NFL experience is always a good experience, right?
Yeah. You know, Drew, you're asking me why I'm coming on the show. Why don't you have something to talk about? Let's talk hockey.
I did have something to talk about. We were going to talk about Ryan Reeves and his hit on Tom Wilson and his comments, and then all of a sudden the segment got derailed by you calling in. We're not a call-in show.
Let's chime in on this. I mean, Ryan Reeves, first off, I love the fact that he went after Tom Wilson. He got a match penalty in the game. Should not have been a suspendable hit. And as far as Tom Wilson goes, I mean, we've talked about Tom Wilson on the show so many times. I mean, I think that, you know, he is a guy that plays on the line, but that particular hit on Brett Sini, I thought it should have been suspended, and he didn't get suspended for that. So as far as Reeves going after Wilson, though, I mean, come on, good Winnipeg boy. I think Dave M would agree with me that, you know, Ryan Reeves is just sticking up for his teammates, and that's not a suspension. Come on, Drew.
What'd you think of his comment, you don't mess with the lion in the jungle, and then he actually autographed that picture?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so the post-game quote is,
This is Reeves talking about the game and talking about his hit on Wilson. Quote, that was a man's game out there. I thought he was just looking at his pass, and he ran into a lion in the jungle. If he sees me, I know he's going to try and lay me out, and I'm not going to let that happen. I thought it was shoulder to shoulder, and I didn't think it was late.
I agree.
Okay. Ezzy, we're going to let you go because I got to wrap up the show now, but it's always nice to hear from you. Are you coming back next week?
Enjoy the rest of the show. I'll see you guys next week.
Alrighty, there you go. A special appearance from Ezzy Ginsberg joining us from Arizona when he's on vacation and still can't get enough of us, clearly, as the case may be there, David. I thought it was a great quote. I mean, I don't really care about the hit. The hit was fine to me. I thought that's a great quote. It's one of the great all-time quotes.
Yeah, but whatever the fact
he ran into a lion in the jungle, that's a great
Reeves
quote.
Reeves is always a great quote, but yeah. I mean, the fact that someone actually blew that picture up, then had Reeves sign it,
yeah.
And they were putting it up for, they were selling them.
On eBay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess Reeves asked the guy to take it down.
Yeah.
And you know, he did.
Yeah.
And so it's they eventually got rid of it, but... Yeah, those two players do not like each other, and Tom Wilson is not a player who has a lot of love from around the league.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's available on tsn1290.ca, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts. Just subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big props to producer Sean Asore and Double Duty being on air with us as well. Thanks for that, Shawnee. A big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Sean Asore, for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.